NHL, powered by the Tennessee Lottery, with Brent Daugherty and Don Davenport.
So Greg Sankey has a chance to do something right now, and like as behind him as I've been with the whole wait until you have to make a decision deal, that worked out well.
Yeah.
I am totally against what he is doing now with these three players, Tennessee offensive lineman Cade Mays, Ole Miss defensive back Otis Reese, and Kentucky quarterback Joey Gatewood. He did a radio interview with Jocks. We'll get to it in a second. But, man, based on what he said today, doesn't look good for any of those three players to be able to play this year. And here we sit on Wednesday before the season begins. And the craziest part about this, Don, is for all of the time and effort and angst that people spent with the NCAA clearing Cade Mays, for example,
right?
It really ultimately never mattered, apparently.
No, apparently all that matters is SEC and conference decision, right?
Gosh, this is crazy. We'll get to that in just a second. But real quick, whistling in the NFL, it's funny because I told you that – what game was it? Was it – I think it was Navy. No, it was Army. No, it was Navy. It was Navy and BYU.
BYU, yeah.
And I said the whistles were so loud, it was driving me crazy. But then you heard, like,
there was also nobody in the stands.
Yeah. Zero. In the NFL game, sometimes you don't hear them. And then sometimes you hear things, and maybe there wasn't a whistle. Like, there was a play in the Titans game where Taylor Lewan pre-snap just stood up. And I heard the same thing he did. I thought I heard a whistle, and he did too. And he turned around and looked at the back judge. I guess it was the head referee, the white hat. And then he put his hand back on the ground. He should have been flagged for a pass for a false start there. But then Derrick Henry false started anyway. So that was in the midst of all of those false starts. And then they ended up picking the first down up anyway. But are they going to stay with this, like, this button system with the whistles?
Well, there is a Steve Shaw, who's the CFO, national coordinator of football officials, did release this today that says, effective immediately, CFO football officials may now optionally add a traditional whistle in conjunction with the electronic whistle to administer the game. And then there is a list of protocols if they want to use that approach. And obviously, a lot of the protocols talks about how important it is to wear a mask, and that the mask is certainly recommended, but it does say, in situations where there is concern about the electronic whistle being heard clearly, officials may optionally utilize a traditional whistle. This does not eliminate the need for other COVID-19 mitigation efforts. So throughout the change, there's lots of, okay, but you need to wear your mask on dead balls, and okay, you know, the mask has to immediately go back on after the use of said traditional whistle. So basically, they will be allowed to utilize both if they want to, in combination together, but the official has to minimize the time lowering their mask and using the traditional whistle, and should use the electronic whistle whenever possible. In other words, hey, we hear you. You can use the traditional whistle. Just try and not go overboard.
Or, I mean, if you're not near people, use the whistle. I don't know. You were on the sideline at Troy against Middle Tennessee. Did you notice anything particularly different with the handheld?
Yeah, there was a couple of times it was tough to hear.
Really?
Yeah, and that was – and JT was in the stands. I don't know. Now, there weren't, you know, 5,000-7,000 people there, but I thought it was hard to hear a couple times on the sideline. JT, I don't know. Could you hear it in the stands at all? I mean, it's not a full stadium. They actually had their band, too. You didn't hear it?
No, I'm with you, and you were right there on top of it, so no, I really didn't hear it.
Yeah.
That was just the ladies whistling at JT.
That's right. That's right, JT.
By the way, we mentioned this JT is all over this Instagram. She was an Instagram model, right? That also sings music.
Is that what's going on? Music singer.
No, she was nowhere near a model. She's a model in my heart now.
Oh no.
So she's a country music singer, but I don't know. I thought you were showing us, like, her name is Priscilla Block, so people can go look at her on Instagram. She just signed with Universal.
Yeah, so whoever over at Universal knows her, like, could you please do your part to help put the two of us together? And listen, my wife is on, like, I've told her, hey, look, I'm into Priscilla Block. So anybody over there who just signed a record deal yesterday, help a brother out. Let me get a follow back on Instagram.
Oh my gosh. JT's upset. This is JT's new obsession. By the way, if you don't listen to this show often, his prior obsession was Miranda Lambert.
But he had a chance to make a move at a meet and greet, and then he froze up and didn't say anything.
She's just pissed me off because now she's with this little boy toy, 22-year-old looking firefighter who, you know, looks like he spends 24 hours a day in the gym.
Yeah, he's a specimen.
No, this is our text feed last night, JT, about 10 o'clock at night. Y'all, my next wife is on a roll. And it's a headline, Priscilla Block signs with the Universal Music Group. So, yeah, maybe we know some people over there. Maybe we can make a meet and greet happen. Hopefully you won't freeze up this time. I don't know.
I'm just not going to take my wife this time. It'll be a lot easier.
Oh, you think that's why you froze? Nah.
All right. Greg Sankey is frozen. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on Jocks Radio in Birmingham. There are three players that transferred within the conference that are still waiting to hear from the conference. That's Tennessee offensive lineman Cade Mays. Obviously, we've spent a lot of time on that. Ole Miss defensive back Otis Reese. And at some point today, I will read his statement. He's got some allegations in there about Georgia. And Kentucky quarterback Joey Gatewood, who came from Auburn, who actually plays Kentucky this weekend. This is what Commissioner Sankey had to say this morning on Jocks Radio, our sister station in Birmingham.
If I'm clear, it's about intra-conference transfers. Yeah, there's a very direct rule that says if you transfer from school A to school B in the SEC, you serve an academic year of residence. There are a set of NCAA oddity exceptions. And then in 2018, our membership created two more, one for grad transfers and one for individuals on teams that face postseason bans. And people send in waivers, but, you know, one of the questions that should be asked is not what's the commissioner going to do. It is why haven't our members voted to change that rule? So we're inviting people to campus knowing there's a clear rule. And now everyone points and says, well, you need to let people out of that rule. And one of the questions that's real is, why has our membership not acted to change? And the answer is because we have to work together. We have to be respectful. Could it change? Should it change? Might we manage it differently? You know, those are questions still to be answered. But the real direct answer is decades ago and repeatedly since, the now 14 member universities of the SEC have said we think that rule is appropriate within our own conference.
In an untimed year during COVID, clear these three dudes.
It's very clear that Sankey wants zero precedent set. Zero.
That's what I take
from it
too.
You can't allow it to happen this year just because it's an untimed year and it's COVID and what have you.
Sure you can.
Because, it is, we've never been here in this position as a society, but.
Just blame it on 2020 and move on.
Yeah, blame it on 2020. But that is very clearly, I'm not allowing a precedent to be set or basically allowing this to happen, a break of the rules just for this year, because it's going to come back to bite later, especially when, you know, the vote is never to approve it. It's slippery slope in conference transfers. It really is.
Well, if Cade Mays is like the text of his appeal or his reasoning for leaving Georgia and transferring to Tennessee, it's out there officially. Kirby takes a hit. And if this stuff that this Ole Miss DB that transferred from Georgia says is true, Kirby takes a hit. Gatewood's a little more straight up from what I hear, but I don't know. I mean, I was not expecting that this morning. It's funny because, like, everybody the whole way is talking about NCAA clearance. Can he get cleared by the NCAA? Is he going to be cleared by the NCAA? Well, he wasn't.
And that
then
is just going to be done. And
yeah, and then he wins his appeal. But at no point did you think, okay, the SEC will end up blocking this. But we should have all known that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as Sinky said, it's a clear rule.
It is a clear rule, but it as you point out, it's an untimed year.
Untimed year. Yeah, at some point today, I'll read this Otis Reese stuff. It's he went at Georgia. Yeah. He went at Georgia. Also, by the way, coming up later, maybe at 5:45, JT did find the audio that we were talking about yesterday. That's some of the most uncomfortable radio in the history of radio. Like Marconi was probably rolling around when this happened. Warren Sapp versus Clay Travis. It was. It was unreal. We'll play that for you. I haven't heard it in a long time, but we'll play that for you at 5:45. We've got a lot coming up, including Grant Ramey. So from a Tennessee perspective, Grant Ramey covers the Vols for GoVols 24/7, joins us in just a couple of minutes, and we'll start with that topic with Cade Mays and where that sits as we sit here on Wednesday before the Saturday openers. 3HL is powered by the Tennessee Lottery.
Tomorrow on the Midday 180.
Coach Mack kicks off the show with us. We'll also be joined by Titans left tackle Taylor Lewan.
The best college football block you'll find with Clay Travis from Outkick and Stephen Godfrey of Banner Society.
And what's Derrick Henry thinking about what Derrick Henry's doing so far?
Tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 104.5 The Zone.
HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Brent Doherty, Don Davenport with you until 6 o'clock. This is what we do every day from 3 until 6, and we invite you to listen to all 3 hours, every second of every show, and tell everyone you know about 3HL and 104.5 The Zone. Grant Ramey is in Knoxville. He covers the Vols for GoVols 24/7 at Grant Ramey on Twitter. Grant, what's up? How are you?
I'm great. How are y'all doing today?
We are doing well, and just to let everyone know, you're going to be joining us on Mondays to kind of recap what happened over the weekend in the previous Tennessee game, but want to get you on today to kind of preview the season and preview what's going to happen on Saturday. So good to see you on Zoom. Appreciate you being here, man.
Appreciate y'all having me. Excited to actually have some football to talk about and some actual sports, SEC sports to talk about for once in a while.
Well, let's start with what we were just talking about on the show, and that's Greg Sankey talking about in a broader term, broader sense, but more specifically to fans right now. Tennessee offensive lineman Cade Mays, Ole Miss defensive back Otis Reese, Kentucky quarterback Joey Gatewood, all trying to, well, they all did transfer within conference, looking for eligibility, and he basically said today the rule is the rule, which was a hard line stand, but really sounded like. From a Tennessee perspective, that the Vols, it looks like, will not be with Cade Mays this year in terms of on the football field.
I mean, yeah, I think it kind of caught everybody a little bit flat-footed. I mean, what you're looking at here, the difference between a normal transfer and this is within the conferences, like the three transfers that you mentioned, and that's where the SEC gets involved. They have to, you know, put a stamp on it after the NCAA clears the kid. Obviously, Cade Mays got that from the NCAA last week. And when Jeremy Pruitt talked about it, every time Cade Mays was brought up, he was pretty confident sounding that it was moving in the right direction, that they thought they'd have him available. And then Greg Sankey goes on radio this morning and basically says, you know, this is not really my rule. This is the rule that was voted on by these member schools in June 2018, that if you move within conference, you need to do a year sitting out the student athlete, whatever residency, I can't remember what they call it. And that's kind of the way he explained it. If you want this rule changed, then act on it as a conference, as you know, all these league teams, and change it, because otherwise that's why the rule's there. He said it's a fairly strict rule. You go within conference, you sit out. So after hearing that and after what he said on the teleconference, kind of reconfirming that stuff, that it's, all of a sudden it sounds like, you know, it's not heading in the right direction sitting here on Wednesday when you're boarding a plane Friday to go play on Saturday.
Well, this is what gets me. That rule has been in place since 2018. Why allow all the big hoopla and NCAA, you know, email campaigns and tweets and social media campaigns and all of that surrounding Cade without somebody pointing out, hey, you do realize like this is an SEC rule that ain't going to change.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that, I mean, even people were, I guess, were surprised after the NCAA cleared him that he wasn't ready to go. He had to, he had to go through the SEC and get that stamp on there. And that didn't happen. It hasn't happened yet. And it sounds like it's not going to happen. But yeah, it feels like everybody was kind of wasting their time trying to figure out what's going to go on with NCAA. They denied it at first. He got that appeal cleared. And now we're sitting here today, a few days before kickoff, still waiting. And it sounds like it's heading the wrong direction.
So what does that mean on the field in terms of who is up front for Tennessee on the offensive line?
Well, I mean, one thing it means, if there's a time that you should be ready for this, it's after the training camp or the semblance of training camp that you just had. Because so many people were missing, because you had to use so many different bodies and shuffle so many guys on the offensive line included, I think it hit pretty much every position group. But Cade Mays, as talented as he is, he does not make or break this Tennessee offensive line. You still have Trey Smith, probably the best offensive lineman in the league. You have two young guys, Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright, who are great players with huge futures in front of them. Jerome Carvin, Brandon Kennedy's I believe he's a sixth-year senior now at this point. Mm-hmm. He could be a seventh year if he took the free year of eligibility. So this offensive line, even without Cade Mays, it should still be one of the better offensive lines in the country. But when you get a five-star talent like Cade Mays, you want to plug him in immediately and make this offensive line that much more elite, better, whatever the word is, because they got a lot of big guys up front, and that's how you win a lot of football games.
And with regard to the offensive line, with or without Cade Mays, this group will be much better this year, right? And has a chance to be one of the better offensive lines for Tennessee in a number of years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you go back over the last few months when people were projecting kind of going down the list and ranking different position groups within the SEC. Tennessee's offensive line was consistently mentioned as one of the best in the league. I mean, Trey Smith is Trey Smith. The season that he's had, what he's done. Brandon Kennedy's that guy, that veteran that anchors the offensive line at center. Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright, five-star talents that you went out and got on the recruiting trail, and they've come in, stepped right in and played big roles. I mean, Kevon Calvert's a guy that he's a depth guy that could give you big time snaps if he had to. Jameer Johnson's a guy we haven't even mentioned yet. He's another really good offensive line. The list goes on. They've got the depth there, so they should benefit from that with or without Cade Mays.
In terms of quarterback, obviously Jared Garantano is the guy. They've got Brian Maurer listed second after some talk about JT Schrout having a good off season. What do you anticipate from JG coming into this season? I mean, in terms of language and personnel around him, I mean, everything's similar staff-wise. He should be in a good position to have early success, right?
He should be in the best position he's ever been at Tennessee, because this is the first time he's a fifth-year senior. This is the first time he's ever had the same offensive coordinator for 2 years in a row, the same quarterback coach for 2 years in a row. This is the time, finally, where it feels like he's not starting from scratch, even though he's got so much experience the previous season. He's not starting over with a new verbiage, a new play caller, a new offense. So what you want to see, what these Tennessee football coaches want to see, is a guy that can finally establish some consistency and show something. I mean, if we learned anything last season, it's that this staff is not afraid to pull the plug on a quarterback and put the next guy in and see what he can do. I mean, Garantano started, he came off the bench, he played injured, he did a little bit of everything, and he was better at times coming off the bench. He was he struggled at times, obviously, early in the year when we spent the whole offseason last year thinking maybe this is the time that he steps up and becomes that consistent guy that you need at quarterback. But the time is now because, you know, JT Schrout has been impressive based on what coaches have said and what others have said. He's a lot more confident. They say he's always had the arm talent there. Brian Maurer's a guy that has missed some time in camp, like Harrison Bailey did, the freshman. He missed time early in camp. That kind of put him behind the eight ball. But, I mean, Jared Garantano should be your guy in best-case scenario from start to finish and finally show some consistency. I think that's the that would be the best bet for the Tennessee football team moving forward if you want to win a lot of games.
I think Tennessee has an NFL running back in Eric Gray, and he and Ty Chandler will be. It'll be fun to watch how they kind of manipulate that position. Who's the third guy?
Oh man, that's a good question. I mean, D Beckwith, the freshman. You know, he was so versatile as an athlete in high school. Jeremy Pruitt was talking about today on the SEC coaches teleconference. He played quarterback, he played running back, he played wide receiver. He was one of those guys where he's the best player on the team. He's going to play and get the ball in his hand as much as he can. And he was a guy that had recently moved to running back and kind of became that third guy, experimentally at least, to see what you could get out of him. He's a big body, a guy that, you know, was labeled as a wide receiver, but it's probably built more like a tight end, and maybe he could run like a running back. But apparently there's been an ankle injury this week that Jeremy Pruitt announced today. He's not going to travel for South Carolina on Saturday, and he kind of made it sound like this might be something that takes a while for him to get back from if he's going to do something as a freshman this season. But yeah, the fortunate thing is you two have two really good running backs in Todd Chandler and Eric Gray to work with. The big question is who's going to be that number three if you have to go find that number three.
What's the biggest concern for this team as you look at South Carolina heading into the opener?
Sloppiness, mistakes, just because of how many guys have missed time in this camp. I mean, Pruitt said at one time the number was over 50 for a practice in terms of missed players. They had a scrimmage scheduled for a Saturday a few weeks ago when they had 44 guys out. They had to go just kind of a regular practice. They've been at times with only four scholarship wide receivers at practice. I think the approximation is they maybe had 15 practices worth of time with their wide receivers. And I think it extends the defense as well. This is when the numbers are that large, I think it's hit every position group it can hit. And you have to figure out, you know, what's this football team look like? How prepared is it compared to how prepared it would be in a normal year? There's not really been that full scrimmage work where you get prepared for these game days. And there's no non-conference games. You're not kind of wading into the schedule. You're jumping in head first, an SEC road game, and you got to figure out how well you can execute. And the good thing is you just have to be a little bit better than the other team. They're going to be sloppy too. They're going to make mistakes. Just make fewer mistakes than the team on the other side of the ball.
So what are you hearing from a COVID standpoint as we sit here about 72 hours out?
This is going to be the fun thing to try to figure out all season long, is what the number is and who the guys are that are out. And I don't think you're really going to know until people are on the ground the day of the game, counting people and figuring out who's there and who's not out there. This is going to be like a next level injury report, because everybody is dealing with this across the league and nobody wants to tip their hand as to who they're going to be missing. But when Pruitt does talk about it, the way he's talked about the last week and a half or so, it sounds like it's headed the right direction, and maybe Tennessee has weathered the worst part of the storm. I mean, last week, Jeremy Pruitt said Tuesday and Thursday they had the most players on the practice field that they've had since the third workout of camp, which was, you know, 5-6 weeks ago. So it sounds like it's heading the right direction. Who exactly is not going to be there? That's anybody's guess until you see uniforms on the field.
I guess everybody except Missouri, he's all about giving exactly COVID numbers and how many they're missing, because he said it's important in this time. I'm not sure that the other coaches are on the same page as he is, though.
It's not going to be fun to be Missouri. You know, good for him for being transparent and throwing it right out there. But for Missouri and Arkansas and the Vanderbilts of this year, it's not going to be fun. There's a lot of, you know, guys opting out, first-year coaches, really, really tough schedules. It's going to be tough for a few of these teams across the board. But I think these teams that are trying to compete and, you know, try to win games and try to finish as high as you can in the standings, I don't think they're going to tip their hand any more than they have to, which is nothing.
Well, let's hit on the challenge that the Tennessee secondary will have in that they kind of have an unknown. I mean, Colin Hill played at Colorado State. He's got 5 300-yard games, but he hasn't played at South Carolina. He beats out Tyler Hulinski. South Carolina offensive coordinator Mike Bobo was Hill's head coach at Colorado State, so this shouldn't be a complete surprise. But is there a concern level there in terms of what South Carolina can do through the air?
I think there's kind of been a little bit of, a lot of frustration with South Carolina's offense in the past, obviously, that led to the offensive coordinator changes to bring in Mike Bobo. And, it was kind of surprising a little bit to see Colin Hill win that job, maybe not much in Columbia based on his track record with Bobo and how experienced he is. But if there's anywhere in this Tennessee depth chart that you trust, at least on the defensive side of the ball, It's those defensive backs, Alante Taylor, Bryce Thompson, Sean Chemberger, Trayvon Flowers, those guys. You got a lot of veteran experience back there, guys that have shown they're really good football players and they can put a good product on the field. So I would have more confidence, I guess, a way of saying it, in the Tennessee defensive backs than I would in maybe South Carolina's quarterback situation. It was a battle for, you know, 3-4 weeks in camp before they announced a starter. So maybe there's more confidence in Tennessee's defense right now than South Carolina's offense.
Do you have confidence in this Tennessee defense's ability to affect the passer this year?
That's going to be another kind of try to figure it out as it happens. Obviously, you lose Darryl Taylor. That's tough. You know, second round draft pick, a guy that had, I think, 16 and a half sacks the last 2 years. You got to find that pass rush. And that's one thing that Pruitt has been probably most vocal about during camp is the lack of pass rush, the lack of disruptiveness up front. But I think with this defensive line, at least last year, I think it feels like maybe the last couple of years they've overachieved. This coaching staff has in developing a defensive line with the talent they've been given. So I think starting over, it's not going to be easy, but DeAndre Johnson's a talented guy on the edge. Matthew Butler's a talented guy. Aubrey Solomon, Croc Garland at nose tackle. Latrell Bumpus is a guy that he moved positions around a lot, but he's kind of settled in at defensive end now. Pruitt's kind of praised him. Derek Ansley, defensive coordinator, praised him as kind of the most consistent guy up front. So I think they'll develop it eventually. I just don't know how quickly it's going to happen because it sounds like they're a little bit behind in camp and they still got some ground to make up.
Grant Ramey covers the Vols for GoVols 24/7, will be a weekly guest for us. Grant, are there two or three freshmen that fans need to be excited about in terms of seeing them early?
I think you look at receiver, even though kind of funny, they put out a depth chart, and I don't think there was any freshman on that depth chart behind maybe Harrison Bailey, the four-string quarterback. But you look at receiver Jalen Hyatt. He's a guy out of South Carolina, really, really fast. I mean, elite speed. And you look at Malachi Wideman. He was a four-star basketball prospect, just like he was a four-star football prospect because he has that kind of athletic ability and leaping ability. And they need answers at wide receiver. They've been hit pretty hard there with guys missing time in camp. And not only that, you're trying to replace Juwan Jennings. You're trying to replace Marquez Callaway, two guys that put up huge numbers last couple seasons. So you got to look at Jalen Hyatt as somebody that could maybe take the top off the defense when he gets a chance to get in there. And you got to look at Malachi Wideman as a guy in a red zone, a big-time red zone target. Maybe if you can go up and get him, you know, jump balls in the corner of the end zone because he has that kind of freak athletic ability.
Great, great stuff, man. I love that we can talk about games. So I appreciate you hopping on. I know you were over there at basketball picture day today too. Like a lot going on over there.
It is. It's actually finally we have something to look forward to, something to cover, something to talk about and write about. And hopefully we can get some fans in buildings before basketball starts because that roster is really, really exciting. And obviously the football and basketball programs seem to be heading in really good directions.
At Grant Ramey on Twitter. Grant, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. See you guys.
All right. Grant will be with us on Monday to talk about what happened in that Tennessee-South Carolina game. By the way, Tennessee now a 3.5-point favorite in that game. The ESPN FPI index gives South Carolina like a 53.7% chance to win. So that's exactly the situation for the Titans in the Denver game. If you'll remember, Titans were about a 3-point favorite. And FPI gave them gave the Broncos that slight nod. It's 53.2% chance. So we'll see what happens. You can catch the game right here on 104.5 The Zone. 3HL is powered by the Tennessee Lottery. The media picked the SEC order of finish. Might be a little bit of a surprise in the East. Got that for you coming up.
It'll be Friday Night Lights as our 104.5 The Zone Game of the Week has Montgomery Bell Academy at Ensworth. Will Bowling has the call. And Midday 180's Chad Withrow gets you started with the pregame show. Friday night at 6, presented by U.S. Army, the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, DTC Wireless, and TNHighSchoolFootball.com. On Nashville's home for high school football, 104.5 The Zone.
Show powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Brent Doherty, Don Davenport with you until 6 o'clock. Coming up at 5:15, Todd Furman We'll break down all the point spreads coming up this weekend. The SEC returning to play. And, Don, the media has the predicted order of finish for the SEC teams for this season. And they also have the all-SEC teams. By the way, with regard to that, there are 8 Alabama players on the first-team offense and defense. I didn't even look at special teams, so there's that. No Georgia players on the first-team offense.
That's surprising. I mean, that's got to be the first in – years,
in the Kirby era. The quarterback is Kyle Trask. That's my guy too. Love that dude. At Florida, mm-hmm. running backs Kylan Hill at Mississippi State, Najee Harris from Alabama, wide receivers Devontae Smith from Alabama, Jalen Waddell from Alabama, tight end Kyle Pitts from Florida. The offensive line, 2 Kentucky players, Landon Young and Drake Jackson, offensive line. Alabama has 2 as well, Landon Dickerson and Alex Leatherwood, and then Trey Smith from Tennessee. On defense, first-team defense, the defensive line, Big Cat Bryant from Auburn, LeBron Ray from Alabama, Georgia with a couple of defensive linemen, Jordan Davis and Malik Herring. Linebackers, Dylan Moses from Alabama, K.J. Britt from Auburn, and Nick Bolton from Missouri. Feels like Nick Bolton's been at Missouri for 12 years. Defensive backs,
yes.
Patrick Surtain from Alabama, Derek Stingley from LSU, Richard LeConte from Georgia, and Jacoby Stevens, who is from Middle Tennessee, playing at LSU. So there is your first team. With regard to the media poll, preseason media poll in the West, the media picked Alabama to win the West. Go figure.
Is that your surprise?
No. LSU number 2. I don't think LSU finishes second this year.
Okay.
They had 15 players drafted and lost 2 off assistant coaches. That's going to be tough. Auburn number 3. Texas A&M number 4. Ole Miss and
Mississippi. Might be able to switch those, really.
I like Texas A&M as my sleeper team.
I do. I like them a lot.
I could see them finishing second. We'll see on Auburn. They should be good, and I like the offensive staff continuity there. I think that should work well, but we'll see.
Continuity? You mean the addition of Mr. Morris?
Yes, Chad Morris and Gus. I like those two working together. This is crazy. Ole Miss had 238 votes. Mississippi State had 238 votes. They are tied for 5th. And Arkansas, no surprise, coming in at 7. From the SEC in the East, I'll go from bottom up. Vanderbilt with 101 votes. That's the fewest votes in the conference. Missouri, 6th. South Carolina, 5th, Kentucky, 4th, Tennessee, 3rd, and it's pretty close between those two. Georgia, number 2, and Florida, number 1 in the East.
I think that's right. Where do you put that?
Okay. I think it's right, too.
Yep.
But, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I like the Gators. Damn, I only got 10 wins out of that group last year, so.
Hey, just to point out,
another year with the quarterback. Yep.
Yeah, which is dangerous for Mullen. Just to point out, the media has only correctly picked the champion 7 times since 1992.
Yes. Oh, I should point out that they picked Alabama to win it all.
Yes.
They've only picked the correct team 7 times since Alabama.
7 times since 1992.
Holy cow.
I know. And you would think that probably a majority of those 7 times would have been Alabama recent.
Well, I mean, if you just pick Alabama every year, you'll get that, won't you? Like, it's crazy.
Hey, now, hey, maybe the tides are changing.
By the way, yeah, pun fully intended. Yeah. By the way, you're headed to Louisiana to work this weekend, and you're in Atlanta. You are in the house that you grew up in. We've got to see the dolls at some point. For those that don't know, Dawn was a ventriloquist, like an award-winning ventriloquist.
Yes.
When she was an infant, basically.
Not an infant, but just growing up. I see. Okay, let me explain.
Have you showed the dolls to Hadley? Like Hadley would be terrified if you showed her those dolls.
I think she might be terrified. I can't subject her to that just yet. So this is the way ventriloquism came about in the first place. I have zero rhythm. I could not dance. My mother could and was a professional dancer forever. So she
was really frustrated by your inability to dance?
Yes. My brother got all of the family moves. Like he can dance like no other. I cannot move. So
that's hilarious.
Anyway, couldn't do that. Wasn't really that great of a singer, you know, like, okay, but nothing special. And so when I was competing in pageants growing up, you know, my mom was like, I don't know what she's going to do talent wise. She's just not quite talented in anything. So, so I learned ventriloquism and picked that up and actually got to be really good at it. So there you go. I will go see if my dolls are hanging around in the corner somewhere and pull them out for you.
Well, I mean, one of them looks like you, right? Like Tiny Babs.
Oh yeah. That one's out because my little niece now uses her and does ventriloquism. So there you go. It's now a family thing. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. It's in the genes. Curtis on Twitter, is it Bizarro Wednesday learning Dawn Davenport was a pageant girl and she's giving fashion advice? No white after Labor Day. Where am I? I think that rule, honestly, like women used to say that all the time. Like my grandmother would say that all the time. I think that's kind of gone by the wayside, don't you?
It has. The
white after Labor Day thing?
Yeah, it's gone away. I usually do it every year because in the SEC, you're working football games after Labor Day and it's 97 degrees in the South on a football field. And I'm like, you can wear white when it's 97 degrees out, right?
Gator Mike chiming in on Twitter at 3HL1045. 11 wins, actually. I like your picks. They got to ride with everything Georgia lost on offense. I meant 10 wins in the regular season, Mike. Gosh. Gator fans, get upset. Give me that bowl win, baby. And yes, I will. I will give you that bowl win because Tennessee fans definitely going to take that bowl win against that they got against Indiana, which they trailed late. We don't have to revisit all that.
Mm-hmm. Almost lost that one.
Yeah, again, Titans in Minnesota will go with the all-white unis, which I love and Don hates. So
I just hate the white pants. I just hate the white. I hate the white britches, as Jimmy would say, britches. The white britches are not flattering.
I called it stormtrooper look earlier. Jordan says, Mayor, it's not the stormtrooper look when the Titans wear navy blue helmets. Okay. Slight detail. PJ, I'm glad I'm not the only one that loves the stormtrooper look. I love it. V love Matra V615. Icy white better than stormtrooper, which is it's a good name for it. Icy white. I'll go with that. And I'll also go with big men in white pants. That's probably not a good combination. I don't own a pair of white pants. This is going to surprise you.
I'm that makes me happy, Brent. Thank you. JT probably has some white pants.
He probably does. Well, what makes me happy is the 5 o'clock hour is coming up. It's time for the happy hour. That's coming up next. 18-3-HL-1045 The Zone.
I have everybody's attention now.
Coming up tomorrow morning.
On the next J-Mart and Ramon, we'll be joined by another man who hates mayonnaise, Andy Staples of The Athletic.
Plus, it's Vols Week, and we'll talk to Phil of Vol for Life, Eric Ain.
That and so much more on the next J-Mart and Ramon.
Rest in peace, Gale Sayers.
And rest in peace, Road Warrior Animal.
Jason Martin and Ramon Foster. Tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 on 104.5 The Zone.